Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. And as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hello, folks. It's the other guy on The Other Podcast. I'm John Hogue. And I see on the control panel here that Diana should be connected to us as well.
Hello, Diana.
There she is. Yes, I hear her voice.
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Well, she just disconnected. There must be some sort of wonderful thing going on.
Okay. She's having some kind of technical glitch on her end down there in Valdosta, Georgia, and I'm sure she'll call back in and we'll try to get her hooked up.
Yes, indeed.
But meanwhile, we have been off the air for 2 weeks because of technical difficulties.
Yeah, there was some sort of glitch that went down 2 weeks ago, and it was on the other end of the wire. And then it was a broken wire last time. Some folks were doing utility work in your neighborhood and managed to dig up the cable.
They were fixing, they were doing water repairs, and in the process they broke the cable, and I was calling the cable service, and I was actually happy to learn that this is what it was, because I was afraid it was one of those billing issues we have from time to time.
I see. Well, Diana is lit up on the screen again here. Are you with us, young lady?
Can you hear us now? We cannot hear you.
Yeah, so something is going wrong. But anyway.
Are we going out? Is our signal?
Yes, I have the light lit up, bouncing around with the meter going with our voices. And there's the connection quality tally is reading excellent. So we should be there.
So we should be there. Okay, folks. Well, anyways, while we wait to see if Diana can get this thing connected. I'll tell you that this week, today, as a matter of fact, my mother-in-law did a 5K walk, the Walk for Life in Mansfield, Ohio, to benefit Richland County's Richland County, Ohio, if you know where that is.
Yeah, I have a text message here from Diana. It says, "I can barely hear."
Is she listening on the phone or what?
I have no idea. Perhaps she'll text me with more information.
Well, anyways, I rattled the tip jar for my mother-in-law. Mm. She had set a goal of $400 fundraising for her 5K walk for the Richmond Pregnancy Services, which is a pro-life ministry, nonprofit, very charitable sort of organization. And she was getting close to the $400 mark. Well, I'm happy to report that she closed out with more than $1,000 in donations, thanks to our blog readers and perhaps also to you, John.
Well, things happen from time to time.
Yeah, people hit the tip jar, and we really appreciate that.
It's the bloggers support each other that way.
Yeah, that's very important.
And let's get started on what we actually are allegedly supposed to be doing, which is talking about the week's news. And I'd like to lead off with a story. It's about tactics. Basically, the title of the post goes, "Okay, this trips over Godwin's law." And then it continues, "But I believe the Battle of the Bulge is an apt historical analogy." I just heard Diana in the background. Yes. Testing 1, 2.
We can hear you.
Sign out and try again. Can't hear you at all. I'm sorry.
You were breaking up.
There. Yes, you are breaking up.
Okay.
Breaking up is hard to do, as Sadaka once said.
Okay. Anyway, the point is that kind of what's going on now politically in the United States, there's an analogy to the Battle of the Bulge. There was a post this week over at the Federalist about polling data on Loudoun and Fairfax counties in Virginia, which are having a big stink over critical race theory in the schools there. And, you know, most of the parents in those counties apparently are really opposed to CRT. I'm so old, I remember when that was a cathode ray tube. But basically then we got to ask the question, with all the parents up in arms about this, why are so many school districts in such a rush to add this to their curricula? And I think what they're doing there is that the same reason Democrats are doing throughout the country, especially in the House and the Senate. They're trying to jam as much as they can through as quickly as they can, because they see themselves in the same place that von Rundstedt, the German general, saw himself in January of 1945. The Democrats' breakthrough in the 2020 presidential election was a kind of surprising. And it isn't unlike Army Group B's breakthrough in the Ardennes Forest. But the problem is the Democrats didn't go all the way. They didn't get state offices. They didn't roll up big majorities in the House and Senate. And so they're just like the Germans didn't punch all the way through to Antwerp, but they're in the situation where they're in a precarious position, and it looks like they're going to get rolled back. The blue states are picking up House seats in the coming reapportionment, and the Democrats aren't going to run reapportionment in a lot of key states. And a lot of them are starting to feel like they've got to get stuff done before the new Congress comes in 2023. So you've got a bunch of people who are willing to ram stuff through, knowing it's going to piss off the electorate, because they know that the electorate gets pissed off and this is their last chance. So half-baked planning has led to half-baked results in the election, and half-baked results wound up with half-baked control of the legislature, which wound up with desperation because of their inability to pass anything, it looks like. And that has led to the kind of overreach we're seeing now, with bills like H.R. 1, trying to federalize elections, and critical race theory in school boards even. So it's going to be an ugly next couple of years. It really is.
Yeah. Well, you know, because it's rabbit season.
Well, no, it's duck season.
No, rabbit season.
Stacey, I can tell you right now, based on your post earlier this week, it is duck season.
All right. I've got a post called Ilhan. Oh, wait.
We're hearing Diana in the background.
Can you bring her?
I have no control over her level. She has sole control over her level. Well, that and whatever connection it has with through Podbean server. So
Diana,
give it a shot, Diana.
Guys, something is really weird on sound here. You're getting a lot of repetition and like double. I don't know. There's a technical term for it. I don't know. Anyway.
We hear the choppiness on your voice as well.
Okay.
So I have no idea. It may be that the recording is what you're hearing. It may be the recording is what we're hearing. Or maybe good.
And we will just.
We will find out.
Boldly go forward. That's all we can do. Anyways.
I loved. Wow. Stacey.
You're hopping in and out now, Diana.
Oh my.
You're breaking up. Okay, well, we're going to just have to just march on through this. So I got a post called Ilhan Omar Quacks Like a Duck. And if you know what, if you know the saying from which that comes, you know, is that, you know, when trying to figure out whether someone is an anti-Semite or not, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Actually, the best version of that I ever heard used in a legal opinion was by Scalia, where he was basically saying that there was some wonderful honor student who'd been shot during a drug raid, and even though he wasn't involved, but if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and hangs out with the ducks, it might get shot for impersonating ducks during a duck season.
Yeah.
So
anyways, Ilhan Omar.
Well, it's about to become duck season on this girl.
Yes. Ilhan Omar provoked an internet rage this week when she was in a House hearing. She said some very stupid things to the Secretary of State. But now, keep in mind that Ilhan Omar saying stupid things just means that she's opened her mouth. She's never said anything that wasn't stupid. People say Jews are, some people will say, tell you Jews are too paranoid about anti-Semitism. But given the history, can you blame them?
I grew up knowing older Jewish adults who had prisoner numbers tattooed on their wrist. They were not at all paranoid.
Yes, and
but they were worried.
We cannot expect them to remain silent while the Democratic Party is taken over by progressive Jew haters. A dozen Jewish Democrat House members are calling out Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota for her comparison of the United States and Israel to Hamas terrorists. A coalition led by Congressman Brad Schneider from Illinois, and it includes Gerald Nadler, who is certainly not anyone's moderate, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, okay, has signed this letter. Quote, equating the United States and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban is as offensive as it is misguided. Ignoring the differences between democracies governed by the rule of law and contemptible organizations that engage in terrorism at best discredits one's intended argument and at worst reflects deep-seated prejudice. And we urge Congressman Omar to clarify her words placing the U.S. and Israel in the same category as Hamas and the Taliban. Well, she just, by the way, it was like, someone had handed her a shovel and she immediately began digging the hole deeper.
Yeah.
And I wrote on my blog, if you had told me 30 years ago that Minnesota would elect to Congress someone like Ilhan Omar, I would have thought you were crazy. Her presence in Congress is not only a stain on the reputation of Minnesota, but also on the Democratic Party in general. How can it be that in a congressional district of more than 700,000 people, Democrats could not find any decent, intelligent person to nominate to Congress?
Well, part of it has to do with the fact that she is in a district that is heavily weighted toward her ethnicity. Just because it became, Minneapolis became an area where a lot of Somali refugees settled. So she thinks she's in a safe seat. But this is an example of that overreach that I was talking about. She doesn't care about pissing off people as long as she keeps her seat. And so, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, we get so much flack, as conservatives. Whenever any Republican anywhere says anything stupid or offensive or something that can be interpreted that way, everyone has got their mics in the face of, whoever Republican they're talking to, say, do you support this? Do you back this up?
That's an example of that. I basically, the Democrats, you know, we're the party of science. All of these people are science deniers. Okay. You know, well, okay. You'll remember perhaps Congress critter Hank Johnson asking the admiral whether or not it would be dangerous for the Navy to station too many personnel on Guam because the island might capsize. That a lot of people, I mean, that still got keeps getting hits on YouTube. A Republican Congress critter was at a hearing. Louis Gohmert was having a hearing and talking with someone who was being nominated to the Forest Service. And he asked this rhetorical question. I understand from what's been testified to the Forest Service and BLM that you want very much to work on the issue of climate change. I was informed by the immediate past director of NASA that they have found that the moon's orbit is changing slightly, and so is the Earth's orbit around the sun. We know there's been significant solar flare activity, and so is there anything the National Forest Service or the BLM can do to change the course of the moon's orbit or the Earth's orbit around the sun? Obviously, that would have a profound effects on our client. Well, of course, you know, so I'll get back to your response.
Yeah,
But the whole point was, you know, trying to frame that as a Hank Johnson moment rather than asking a rhetorical question, saying, what do you think the relative weight of the Forest Service impact on climate is compared to the sun?
Right, right. And by asking this entirely rhetorical question, the obvious answer is there's nothing the Forest Service can do. He's making the point raised by many, by the way, scientific critics of global climate change theory, who point out that natural phenomena, including minor variations in the Earth's orbit, cycles of sunspots and solar flares and so forth, that these minor, changes in orbits and things like that, natural occurrences, may explain, quote unquote, climate change. And so that that all this stuff about trying to shut down the internal combustion engine and bankrupt the coal industry is a waste of time.
Besides, we're not ever going to be able to build enough coal plants fast enough to power all those electric cars.
right. And people
don't understand what percentage of Teslas are coal fired.
That's what I mean about the actual. If you're worried about the output of carbon into the atmosphere, China and India are the places to look to stop that. Because while we have reduced our national carbon footprint, China and India have been growing leaps and bounds in that direction.
Well, China built more than half the coal plants in the that got built in the world in the last year or so. But this is there are certain basic principles that are agreed upon this is our understanding of the way the universe works. But even things like Newton's laws of motions, some guy like Einstein comes along and goes, well, no, that you don't have it right yet. And science is never settled. The only thing science can do is prove what you got wrong, right? And so anyway, but we've got a bunch of science deniers running around with this stuff. We've also got a bunch of math deniers among them. Do you ever get a sense of deja vu about the economy, Stacy?
Yeah, I lived through the 70s. I remember stagflation.
Yeah, all sorts of other things that have happened. I lived through the latter half of the 2000s, that first decade of the century, and it was kind of a rough time there. We had a little bit of an economic downturn. Perhaps you will remember what it was like, though, with stagflation. Anyway, CNBC had a report this week that the consumer price index rose 0.8% during May. Now, that may not sound like much until you think about what's 0.8% in a month is like 5.3% in a year. Inflation's been running under 2% for a decade. Now it's at 5.3%. That's the highest it's been since August 2008. And you bought gas recently? Gas is up over 55% nationwide, and the price of used cars is even up over 25%. So when you deny the effects of math on the federal budgets and other things that have to do with the economy, you know, math denier, it can get you into trouble. 2 plus 2 really does equal 4. You can't force it to be 5 or 3. It just doesn't work. But then again, we also have history deniers as well. There was a thing with that Tom Elliott had up as a tweet, had a video clip video from MSNBC about Representative Clyburn, who's the Democratic whip. And if saying if Congress doesn't nationalize elections soon, the greatest democracy on the face of the earth will go the way of the Roman Empire. The history is very clear, which of course inspired me to do one of my don't know much about history posts. I pointed out that, well, no, if you nationalize the elections, what's going to happen is Congress is going to open up the gates and the barbarians from the blue states on the coast are going to swarm the civilized people in the middle of the country.
Yeah, and the thing is and you've linked, I had a column in the American Spectator this week called Liberals, and that's spectator.org.
Right, as opposed to the other McCain.com, your regular blog.
Right, my usual blogging, but this was at the American Spectator, and the headline is Liberals Ignore the Roots of, quote unquote, Our Democracy. Now, if you've been following what they have been doing ever since January 6th, that our democracy is endangered by people who are skeptical about the outcome of the election. Okay, that's a deal that the Capitol riot and everything is a threat to our democracy.
I didn't know that our was one of their pronouns.
Yeah. You know, that first person plural possessive, whenever you see that in political rhetoric, look very closely at who do they mean by us? Who is the us in the our?
We who,
Kemosabe. Yeah, to the old joke about the I hear Diana in the background there. But anyways, here's the lead of my column. History has been hijacked recently by self-styled progressive who would have us believe our nation was founded on injustice and oppression. The so-called 1619 Project must be viewed as political propaganda intended to incite racial hatred, and every honest and intelligent citizen of the United States ought to oppose this propaganda. Now, I go on from there to talk about one of the problems with people trying to combat critical race theory and the 1619 Project and all this, is they don't actually know American history well enough to know how to reply to this. And the point I'm trying to make here is that our liberties as American have a specific pedigree, which can be traced back to England as far back as Magna Carta. Now, if you know what happened at Magna Carta, you know that King John found himself faced with an uprising of the barons.
Well, yeah, actually, and if you are really into the history of the British Isles. You can push it back even further to the Anglo-Saxons' rules about how to try each other and that sort of stuff. But then that was this Anglo-Saxon barons forcing that on the French.
Right, and the descendant of William the Conqueror, King John. So anyway, but the point is that for four centuries prior to the first settlement, first English settlement in the what is now the United States, for four centuries the English fought very hard to establish representative government limited, to limit the authority of the crown by establishing the rights of the English subject. Okay. And I invoke Patrick Henry's famous Virginia Resolves of 1765, which were a response to the Townsend Stamp Act. And you've got to get into this to understand where did the idea of no taxation without representation come from?
English Bill of Rights.
Right. And the point being that, it's brief so I can read it to you. Resolve that the first adventurers and settlers of His Majesty's colony and dominion of Virginia brought with them and transmitted to their posterity and all other His Majesty's subjects since inhabiting in this His Majesty's said colony, all the liberties, privileges, franchises, and immunities that have at any time been held, enjoyed, and possessed by the people of Great Britain. His point was, is that when the colonists immigrated to America, they did not leave their rights behind them in England, so that they had as much right to self-government in America, okay, as their ancestors did in England, okay, and this was the spark that lit the flame that led to the American Revolution.
And if George the Third had been wise enough to allow for a parliament in each of the colonies or a North American parliament, our national anthem would be God Save the Queen still.
Well, you know, it's funny, that, Canada, Australia, New Zealand are still part of the British Commonwealth because after what happened in America,
they wised up.
Yeah, they got very. They realized what they had to lose by trying to govern by remote. Okay, and this is exactly what you were talking about: the nationalizing elections. Okay, of trying to establish the central government is going to tell us how to run our local elections. All right, that could ignite rebellion because it's right there in the Constitution that it is up to the states to run their own elections, and that includes deciding how to deal with such matters as absentee ballots and stuff like this. There is no requirement, okay, no requirement at all. Okay, that mail-in voting has to be nationalized, or else you're somehow disenfranchising minorities.
Well, once again, it's whose democracy, and the people saying our.
Yes.
Okay, may not be a complete superset of the population. It may just be a somewhat limited subset.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah,
but then again,
right in there, the liberal politicians and media figures who promote fear of threats to our democracy are seldom specific about what the phrase our democracy is intended to mean other than the permanent entrenchment of their own power.
Well, first of all, what democracy?
Right.
Yeah. No, what democracy?
Exactly.
The Congress, the... Constitution requires the national government to guarantee to each of the several states a Republican form of government, which is a representative form of government, whereas a classic democracy is everybody gets a vote. And the best solution, the best description of that I've ever seen is three wolves and a lamb voting on lunch. That's real easy if you're one of the wolves, but one of these days, everybody gets to be the lamb. And so there's reason for these protections of minorities.
Right, right. And you know, the thing is that if you know why, you know, how did we get here? It's always the important question. If you're studying current events from trying to figure out why are we in this particular predicament that we find ourselves in now, it's the fact is that we've gone off course. If you trace a straight line back, you know, to 1765 or even further, if you trace this back, you see how we have gotten away from the principles established at the founding, which, you know, the basis of our quote unquote our democracy. Okay, the liberals are just trampling all over this. They want to infringe the Second Amendment. Your First Amendment rights are null and void if they have anything to do with it. We're all going to be required to repeat the same slogans as if we all have the same opinions about any issue of controversy. And anyone who tries to speak out against the liberal agenda gets banned, from you know, what are common carriers, speaking of Twitter.
Yeah, well, who knows? The point is that, excuse me just a second while I cough. Oh, that's much better. You know, what we got going on here is basically the problem is the math doesn't add up to support somebody's desired position. So, okay, if we can't make things add up under this set of rules, let's change the rules so that we can make things add up our way. On the other hand, you know, it's one thing to think the filibuster is terrible when you can't pass nationalized elections, but it's great when you use it almost 100 times in the previous year when you don't have control of Congress. So, you know, there's a reason why Sinema and Manchin are actually heroes of their party. Anyway, the thing is, in the real world, stuff has to add up.
Right.
And every month, I like to see the column in my bookkeeping still be positive as I add things up. And one of the ways that that gets to happen is people support our blogs. Why don't you tell them about this yellow button?
Yes, folks, if you will go to my blog, The Other McCain, you will notice in the top, near the top of the center column, the yellow button with the word donate on there. If you will click that button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support the blog, to support the podcast, and also to make my wife happy. Making my wife happy is kind of like job number one for me. But
well, it should be.
It always should. You've met my wife, so you understand.
Well, you've met my late wife too. Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, we both married up, and so. But if you would hit the tip jar, And this week, as I said, I was raffling the tip jar for my mother-in-law, who, gave birth to six children, adopted a niece, and so she raised seven, and now has, last time I counted, has 24 grandchildren and an increasing number of great-grandchildren, because I've already got five grandchildren. So we're basically repopulating the world that way. And but I rattled the tip jar for her this week. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com.
I do not have a yellow button, but I do have an icon of a tip jar. And if you click on that, you'll be taken off to PayPal where you can help support Hoguewash.com. Or you can go shop at the Hoguewash store. That's also over in the sidebar. And both the other McCain and Hoguewash participate in the Amazon affiliate program. If you see the Amazon links in an affiliated blog like that, when you click on it, you wind up being taken to some deal at Amazon. Pay the usual price for Amazon, but the blog gets cut of the action. So that's a great way to support a blogger. Regardless, I'm going to see if Diana can cut through and give us the five most important words in the English language. Diana?
Hit freaking tip jar.
As she said, hit the freaking tip jar.
Right. Thank you very much, Diana.
Meanwhile, as long as we're on the wandering around the subject of history denial. Now, okay, he was allegedly a professor of law, not a professor of history, but a former president has really been kind of off the rails on this.
Yeah. Headline on my blog item this week, Obama, still the divider in chief. And he was interviewed on an obscure fringe cable channel known as CNN.
They're not even in the airports anymore.
CNN has dwindled. There are random dudes on YouTube you've never heard of who have a bigger audience than CNN. But former President Barack Obama said in a new interview that racial inequality, nationalization of politics, and siloing of the media is contributing to the intense political divisions in the country. In a special interview with Anderson Cooper that aired on CNN Monday, the former president bashed Republicans for not pushing back on accusations that the 2020 presidential election was stolen and questioned a growing debate on critical race theory. Hang on a second there. He says, each and every time I tried to describe why it was, speaking of how he addressed the issue of race, each and every time I tried to describe why it is that we are still not fully reconciled with our history. But the fact is, it's a hard thing to hear. It's hard for the majority of this country of white Americans. Now, I'm quoting Barry here, Barack, I'm sorry. It's hard for the majority of this country of white Americans to recognize that, look, you can be proud of this country, its traditions, its history, and forefathers, and yet it is also true that this terrible stuff happened. He goes on to say that certain right-wing media venues, for example, that monetize and capitalize on stoking the fear and resentment of a white population that is witnessing a changing America and seeing demographic changes, and do everything they can. I'm sorry about the dog barking there. Your dogs are racist, I believe. They don't shut up, dogs.
Okay.
And do these right-wing media, to continue with what Obama was saying, which makes as much sense as what the dogs were saying. But anyway, he said, these right-wing media do everything they do to give people a sense that their way of life is threatened and people are trying to take advantage of them. Now, my response to this is, consider the possibility that this is true. Consider the possibility that there's something to be fearful and resentful about, that maybe their way of life is threatened by these demographic changes, as he said. And here is the point, and this is the point made 25 years ago by Peter Brimelow, okay, in his book, Alien Nation. The point is that we don't have an immigration policy. We have a lack of policy. There is no policy. It's this thing that was created over the course of 50 years of amending this and court rulings and this, that, and the other. And
thank you, Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, it goes back to Ted Kennedy in 1965, who lied about what he was doing. But I'm not going to get into that. But the point being is that we have changes that the people did not vote for. And every time they have been given an opportunity to address the issue directly, they have voted against these policies. John,
why don't you talk for a minute and let me go kill these dogs. Yes. The whole thing is... you have a group of people who don't have the kind of support that they want to have, because the demographics of who used to support the Democratic Party 50, 60 years ago have gone away. And they're trying, basically, there's the wonderful Bertolt Brecht thing of people aren't coming along, perhaps the government should elect a new people. And that's really the sense of what's going on here. A group of people who want to maintain power are seeing that they can't anymore, and they're trying to basically elect a new people.
And it's not just the politicians. It's the wealthy. It is the corporations that want cheap labor and quote unquote free trade, which I'm in favor of free trade. I'm against protectionism, but
there's another thing going on here as well, and it is important and it is legitimate, and I see both sides of the political divide more or less ignoring it. America changed significantly after the Second World War because, well, your father went to school with the GI Bill.
Right.
Okay. Would he have been able to if he hadn't been a veteran? Probably not. Your family became upwardly mobile because of the GI Bill.
Right.
Your father would have been just as bright and would have been very creative. Instead of being a creative engineer at an aircraft company, would have been a very creative person doing something else that wasn't a professional job, perhaps. And so we have taken a society and stratified it by by intellectual ability to a great extent. We don't have as many bright poor people anymore because the people who became the parents of bright people were able to be economically upward mobile. So now we have a chronic poor class who are trapped there because the kinds of jobs that those people can do don't exist anymore. You actually have to be pretty smart to be a ditch digger now. It takes pretty smart and well-coordinated guy or gal to run a backhoe.
Right.
So, what are we going to, there are people that we are going to have to figure out what we do with as a society, okay, and whose lives and cultures are disappearing. But what is being done is destructive of them rather than helpful. And it's absolutely merciless the way these people are being done in.
Well, the point, getting back to the quote-unquote demographic changes, it is often presented, and we're going to see more numbers in the census, that, for instance, the the changing demographics of California, right? We're just a natural trend. This is just a historic trend that happened and not what it actually was, the result of failed policy, okay? Because the 1986 amnesty, right, that affected mainly the southwestern United States, because that's where most of the illegal immigrants were at the time.
Well, it also coincidentally affected certain areas in the Northeast, which are now even bluer than they used to be. Okay, it's very interesting how that played out.
But the point being that California had been the bastion of Republican conservatism.
Oh, I watched Orange County change while I lived there. It was just amazing. My congressman used to be B1 Bob.
Bob Dornan.
Okay, and Loretta Sanchez is his replacement. Excuse me.
Yeah, and this happened as a result of policy. Our immigration, allegedly, should be controlled by laws, you know, prescribed by Congress, administered by the executive branch, and that got hijacked. It's taken away, and there's never been a referendum that the American people got a chance to vote on.
Well, or not. Well, actually, the 2016 election was the beginning of a sort of referendum. But we'll get to that later. Meanwhile, though, you've got a bunch of Democrats running around with thugs in the street. And, you know, the biggest difference I see between the Democrats' street thugs now and what I saw growing up in the 50s and 60s is at least they've discovered that white is a stupid color to wear at night. But you've got all this rioting and looting going on. It's almost as if they are trying to pick a fight.
Yes, and I had a post this week with the headline in quotes, "Start this war they keep asking for." That is a quote, by the way, from 32-year-old Winston Boogie Smith. Yes, that's right. Winston Boogie Smith.
As opposed to the other Winston Smith.
Right. Everyone knows from 1984, but Winston Boogie Smith was a 32-year-old felon wanted on a warrant for being a felon in possession of a firearm. Now, when a U.S. Marshals task force, okay, had a warrant for his arrest, and they found him in a parking garage, and he quote-unquote produced a handgun and fired at least one shot at the people who were trying to arrest him, and he assumed room temperature. I'll just put it to you that way. He is the late Winston Boogie Smith. And here you had...
What does he think is going to happen if you start busting caps at cops?
Right. But wait a minute. If they actually rioted in Minneapolis before they knew anything, before they knew the guy's name even, before they even knew why he was shot, they started looting. They looted the cell phone store. They looted the liquor store. They looted the usual places that get looted when looting gets started in such cases. And all because of this guy who was a serious felon armed with a handgun. It wasn't like, you know, knee on my neck kind of social injustice or anything like this. This was a bad guy who went out in a blaze of fire, and he had written on his Facebook page. Okay. Now imagine you're a felon, you're out on parole, and you write this on your Facebook page: "We got guns and bulletproof vests too, or should be able to get them. Why not just rush these bleep and start this war they keep asking for? F justice," he says. Justice, he calls justice a bitch. He says, justice is an eye for an eye. Go on, and it's semi-literate rambling. He said, just kill them dirty blank cops off. And this guy had the, you know, proverbial record as long as your arm, and was just a bad guy all the way around. And it used to be in this country, believe it or not, that when the cops killed bad guys, everyone was like, yay, they killed the bad guy. You know, if you don't want to go peaceably, you're going to go another way.
Yeah, well, okay.
The cops are carrying guns for a reason, people.
Well, yes, that most people carry a firearm. Look, firearms are bulky and heavy and inconvenient. And if you're going to carry them, you're carrying them not for the fun of it, but because you have a specific purpose for it. I mean, I carry firearms, for example, if I'm hunting deer. I've also been known to carry firearms when I'm in a dangerous situation. And the last time
Vietnam.
Well, let's just put it like this. The last time I fired for qualification, which was not that long ago, I not only shot a perfect score, but then with an additional magazine, I put all the rounds into the head, which, by the way, the qualification I was saying is headshots don't count at all. Because they're hard to make, so
yeah, the center mass. People, yes.
Well, you have a wombat has a wonderful post up about center of mass at the other McCain. I direct people to it. It's wisdom allegedly from the Dalai Lama. Why don't you go kill that dog again? And I'm going to though set up the next part, which is about basically. Stacy has a somewhat more colorful blog than mine, and he has had a couple of posts this week, which probably could have gone on page 6 of the New York Post or page 3 of the Sun in London. Stacy, page 6.
Yes, okay. I had a post with the headline, Picks or It Didn't Happen, Sophie. And it's about Sophie Turner. If any of you folks watch Game of Thrones, you recognize Sophie Turner.
This, folks, is a post that I do not have to complain about Stacey's failure to adhere to Rule 5.
Yeah, Sophie Turner is a British actress who rose to stardom playing Sansa Stark on HBO series Game of Thrones. 2 years ago, she married singer Joe Jonas and last year gave birth to their first child, a dog. Now, all of this, I tell you to set this up to ask, what is the point of coming out as bisexual? Because that's what Sophie Turner apparently did this week, sort of, posting on Instagram, because, by the way, I don't know if you realize June is Pride Month, and so everyone is supposed to just be cheering, you know, with the rainbow flag as the parade, you know, full of, you know, leather daddies and drag queens marches by.
I heard a teenager make the remark, Pride Month is gay.
Yeah, well, you know, but let me just. This is this compulsory celebration, okay? Mm. You know, I don't know if you know who Bruce Carroll is.
Yes, a friend of ours.
Yeah, a friend of ours, a fellow conservative blogger. He got banned from Twitter, so we have that in common. But Bruce Carroll is known as a gay patriot on social media. And he and his husband have got a...
Someone can be my friend and engage in behaviors with which I do not agree.
Yeah, and well, my kids all have tattoos. Well, my sons all have tattoos, and I hate tattoos, so that's my point. But getting back to Bruce Carroll and his husband have just bought a splendid residence in Key West with a beautiful swimming pool. And I have told them, I said, I am coming down there because there's something. If Florida's a swing state, right, there's got to be something in Key West that is newsworthy enough for me to, crash on their sofa, and then I will sit out with my laptop beside their swimming pool, and I'll probably write some stuff, and that will all be a tax-deductible business expense. And so the idea that if you're not just completely down with the total messaging of the LGBTQIA movement, right, that if you're not completely down for whatever the agenda is supposed to be, that you're some kind of bigot, it's just not true. And people know this. It's like anyone nowadays, anyone who didn't vote for Joe Biden is a white supremacist. There are 70 million white supremacists running around the country, allegedly. And the same way, we're all homophobic bigots. Well, this business,
Stacey, you're racist.
But this idea that a married mother, right? Okay, she's married to a man, they have a child, they are a family, okay? She decided the need to come out as bisexual. And I'm like, why? It's like, what is the point here? And she said, and I quote her here, "Everyone experiments. It's part of growing up. I love a soul, not a gender."
Well, okay. I'm so old, I can remember when that would have been scandalous. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It used to be, but nobody is scandalized. We just all roll our eyes. Well, of course, every actress in Hollywood is coming out as bisexual. It's trendy. It's just stupid trendiness. And as for the thing, and I make the point, I write this, let me throw some logic at you, Sophie Turner. If we stipulate it is true, as you say, that quote unquote, everyone experiments, then what exactly distinguishes the self-declared bisexual from everyone? Oh, if everyone's experimenting, and if that experimentation means that you're bisexual, then everyone is bisexual. So what's the point of even having a name for it? Okay. But I got people on Reddit. Okay. I got in the bisexual thread on Reddit, there's people calling me out as a biphobe. And I'm like, oh, yes. That's me, a terrible biphobic person.
Okay, well, first of all,
I'm telling you what do they look at what Amber Heard did to Johnny Depp.
Well, first of all, I even if you disliked bisexual people unnecessarily or unjustifiably or for some wrong-headed reason, that wouldn't make you biphobic. Phobos is the Greek word for fear, and I don't think you're afraid of bisexual people. See,
well,
I mean, they're not
afraid.
even speaking with any reason. Their words don't make sense.
Well, I have told my kids, I told my daughters, never date a Jonas Brothers, and I've told my sons, never date a girl who's dated a Jonas Brother. Okay, because they're like every whacked out, mentally ill actress in Hollywood. You know, these young starlets that used to be in these Disney and Nickelodeon shows. Every one of those girls dated a Jonas Brother. Okay, and their mental health issues. I'm like, it's pretty obvious. I mean, if post hoc ergo propter hoc, right? It's a fallacy, but sometimes it's true.
Stacy. Crazy people are dangerous.
Crazy people are
dangerous. And we have a recurring crazy this week. We have Rebecca Jones.
Oh, no, Rebecca Jones.
It started out this week with just one little episode, but it's turned into a twofer. I had a couple of posts on Monday. Basically, she got banned from Twitter. her Geo Rebecca account was suspended. And when I checked her Geo Campaigns account, which was a account she had up for her a planned run for the 6th Congressional District in Maryland for 2022, that account had been pulled down, not suspended, but pulled down. So that was kind of an interesting thing to see. And then later in the day, she tried to get back on, even though she'd been permanently banned. And so very quickly at Rebel Geo got suspended by Twitter when they caught her at it. So that's been kind of an interesting thing to see happening to her. And then she announced she was going to run for Congress in the first district of Florida. But it turned out that's she's just come out with only kidding on that. That was just trying to make a point. It was a publicity stunt.
Well, I hear the boogie woogie piano in the background, which tells me we are nearing the end of our weekly podcast. We're glad to be back online. We're sorry that we couldn't get the connection with Diana this week, but we hope to have that fixed for you next week.
I'll have to get hooked back up.
I miss her.
We'll do a test run.
So we will return next week, 7 p.m. Eastern time, Saturday night. That's where you always find us. And you can go to if you've got the Podbean app, you can download us anytime and listen at your will.
Or you can use the link that you'll find at Hogwash.
Thank you, and we'll see you next week, folks.
Good night, folks.